Hail cheaters, welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name's Josh, I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm good, Josh. I feel like there's a little extra motor behind you right now. This could be the quickest game week turnaround we've had this season. Yeah, matches start up again on Tuesday.
We're recording late Sunday. The matches start on Tuesday. We're actually going to try to keep this one. We've been going long, even by our standards. We've been going pretty long recently, hour 15, hour 30. I never understand it because I look at the order and I'm like, all right, we narrowed it down to 7 questions, we're just going to hit. It's stuff like me talking right now that actually makes it 90 minutes long. So it is, but again, quick turnaround. Matches start on Tuesday. It's actually the first of 2 sets of these midweek, early December matches, because you have matches midweek and then matches the weekend. And then next week, you have the Champions League, the final round, and then matches that weekend, and then matches the weekend after that, or in the midweek after that. So you have, I think it's what, that's, so it's like 4 game weeks in 2.5 weeks or something like that.
Right.
So a lot coming our way. And everyone is starting off on a really upbeat and happy note because we all lost our Spurs players on Sunday morning.
I mean, that is a, you just have to laugh because it was a combination of just a complete act of God, totally out of your control. Coupled with the fact that these were players that a lot of managers were counting on for big points. Kane and Son, the expectation was these guys were going to get attacking returns and help lift up everyone's game week scores, especially going into Sunday when people were kind of struggling a little bit. You know, a lot of us were in the mid-30s points range after Saturday. Will Spurs save us? And then right out of the gate, nope, Spurs are off the table. And for you, Josh, that was a disaster because your move was for Kane this week.
Yeah. Right? Well, it was just frustrating. Yeah, I mean, exactly. And, it was frustrating because I put a lot of time into it. You know, I really tried to, think about it. I went to the trouble of sort of writing out my entire thought process and put it together in this little thread. And I thought it was, coherent and made sense. And then you're like, nope, act of God doesn't matter, And instead of whatever I would have got from Kane, I got 1 point from Damari Gray off the bench. And I know some people got 0 from Livramento. And it was just kind of a fluky situation. Yeah. So it was actually
conversely, not to armchair this, but you would have gotten 0 from Ronaldo had you held him. I mean, this was game week 13, the game week of banter yellow cards, where Mbeumo gets one at the end of injury time. Ronaldo comes on as a sub and gets a meaningless red card for arguing, I don't even know what, with Anthony Mason.
Right,
yellow.
And that's three in the last 5 for him. So he's actually kind of, I suppose, on yellow card watch now. So that at least puts him into that danger zone a little bit. That's true. I mean, Ronaldo was always going to go this week. I was just sick of having him, and I really didn't care about the upcoming fixture. I'm not even sure that Arsenal fixture, if Ragnev hasn't come in yet, I'm not sure that that's a great fixture for him. And I'm not convinced that Ragnev is a great fit for him either. I mean, the guy who invented gegenpressing is going to take over Man United. Right. Who's the guy who famously doesn't press? It's Ronaldo. And so I don't quite understand how he's going to work. Is he going to be okay being a super sub or something in Man United? It just feels very, once it was announced, it sounded like a great move for Man United, but it also made me feel this is not something this did not get me excited about bringing Ronaldo back into my team.
There was this weird aura of backpedaling after the Chelsea United match where it was sort of when Ragnick actually comes in, how much longer does Carrick have? I watched this David De Gea post-match press interview, and he didn't seem to have any idea what was going on with the managerial situation. So it's just chaos continues at that club.
Yeah, and it was funny to see people come out and give. I mean, I don't want to this. Man United fans have had enough already, from everybody. But I mean, the idea that that was an impressive performance is kind of puzzling to me, because that's it's basically what Burnley did to Chelsea a couple weeks ago, right? Totally dominated, one long ball, right? And a long ball falls at just the right spot, or I suppose Jorginho makes the mistake at just the right time, and and they scored a goal. I mean, there was never a moment where it felt like Man United could honestly, there was never a moment where it felt like they could win that match or even score a goal.
Right.
Like that one goal was like, it really came from nothing. And it was just David De Gea's heroics really that kept them, you know, in the match.
Yeah. It was the XG on understat for that match as Chelsea at 2.35 and Manchester United at 0.56. So according to the stats, Chelsea should have won by at least two goals.
Yeah. I guess the 0.56 was all that that one-on-one chance.
Oh, yeah. I think that was their only shot on target, right?
Was it? No, there was one late because Fred was given the ball by Mendy,
and then
he passed it back to him. Like it was like a back pass.
right. I remember celebrating my Mendy save in that moment. The one good thing that happened to my fantasy team in that match.
Yeah, you didn't get three saves out of that.
Yeah, it was but it boosted Mendy's BPS, and we're always watching the underlying stats, true. Josh.
Yeah, it boosts his confidence, right? So we'll see what happens with Man United. I mean, it's too early to speculate, really, but I don't think that the Arsenal match this weekend is on Thursday, is a particularly enticing match for them either. I mean, I think Arsenal have looked. Defense. Okay. I realize they just went to Liverpool and lost 4-0, but I thought they actually acquitted themselves okay in that match. It kind of got away from them late. And also, Man United are not Liverpool, at least at the moment. And so I don't see that. I actually think it would not be crazy for Arsenal to keep a clean sheet in that match.
Yeah. And I think going back to that Liverpool match, I think the interesting comparison between that Arsenal team and that Liverpool team that has a host of trophies and experience and age, comparatively, the Arsenal team was much younger, lacking experience. You take Aubameyang out of that squad, and I think like the average age has got to be around 21 or something like that. So I agree, the 4-0 scoreline there was unflattering and kind of unfair for that young Arsenal team, and I think they handled that Newcastle match pretty well.
Awesome. They looked great. Yeah,
I was thinking especially too of the matchup between Callum Wilson and Gabriel, and we're going to talk a bit about Newcastle strikers in a moment. But Arsenal were not afraid to get physical with that Newcastle team that really, honestly, at this point has nothing to lose or everything to lose, as it were. So, I mean, it's just all sorts of encouraging signs for Arsenal.
Yeah, and a Newcastle team that has shown they can score some goals, right? Maybe that's like the one thing you can say about them. So, I guess everyone looked great except for Aubameyang, right? He missed that point blank. That was like, it like kind of hurt everybody because it was like, I think it was Saka to Smith Rowe. Yeah. Smith Rowe, you know, I think it was an off the post or it was
a goalkeeper save. Yeah, Dubravka parried it away into Aubameyang's path, right?
Feet, right. And then Aubameyang misses from... it was kind of the week of that because right at the end of the Chelsea match too, Rudiger, which really would have saved my game week too. Mm-hmm. Rudiger unmarked, blast the ball as hard. I mean, you know, it's like, it's one of those cliches, but like that ball has still not hit the ground, right? It's still rising, crossing over to the moon right now.
What's funny about that Rudiger miss is I was on Instagram and I saw Chelsea, or maybe it was the Premier League doing great goals between this fixture, Chelsea and United. And there was that exact goal where Fernando Torres crosses it from the same place Pulisic did today. And Juan Mata was on the other end for Chelsea. And he just roofed it for a goal. And it's just like Rudiger was not Juan Mata in that moment. He's a center half. That was, he was probably never going to make that
up there though. Like he's popping up all the time. It's crazy.
He's a marauding center half, Josh.
He has turned into one all of a sudden. It's like he's hungry for goals right now, which I love. I mean, I don't know how they didn't get a goal with like those like 19 corner kicks they had in that match. But anyway, so, last week, Brendan, you know, the old thing they say in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. And you did a lot of explaining last week about your team, and things did not go that well. So I will just quickly say that I had a trash game week, one that the Kane move totally backfired. I brought in Gallagher, who I like, and now I like immediately want to get rid of. I was like super unimpressed in that match. Like everything, all the good things I said about him, I immediately take back. No, I mean, I'm being a little dramatic here, but I was not like thrilled with how he looked in that game. Yeah, I finished on, I think it was 49 points all told, which, you know, it was like, it was one of those ones where your overall rank isn't affected that much, but it's a massacre in your mini leagues. Mm-hmm. And I was really feeling that one with not having Jota this week. That was really killer. I don't know when everybody got Jota. Like, it happened so fast. Like, you just came back in so many teams.
Yeah.
And it kind of kicked myself because I had two transfers and I could have brought him in. And I just, that was not the move that I prioritized. And then obviously compounded with Spurs not playing was kind of a bummer, but in the end, I was like 7.4K and now I'm 12.4K. So I only moved down 5,000 places. And, you know, so I feel like, you know, whatever, move on. We play on Tuesday. It's all good. And, but I'm going to give you the stage now, Brandon, because you now, have a chance to be in the reverse of where you were last week and talk about how well everything worked out.
Yeah, I did have a good game week. I finished on 65 points, and I've been waiting for a game week in which some of my differential players came through for me, and Saka did, as well as Vardy. Now, all of the explaining I've been doing over the last few weeks has come down to wasted transfers, tinkering in my defense. And I still don't think I have my defense exactly the way I wanted it. But tinker, injuries, screw-ups resulted in me not being able to do Harry Kane for free. And ultimately, all of the points that I lost out on tinkering with my defense have, some of them at least, have come back with that Vardy brace, the 12-pointer. So I'm happy about that. And now it's like Leonardo DiCaprio and Wolf of Wall Street. Jamie Vardy is just banging the microphone against his head saying, I'm staying. So he gets to stay in my squad. I mean, mostly because who else are we going to get, Josh? But also, yeah. Leicester, for as weird as that team looks at the moment and bad injuries and whatnot, they have a good enough fixture run to justify keeping Vardy. So,
yeah.
But my problems now are really in the midfield. So this is something we can address as we talk about game week 14. But, you know, I can concede that, yes, I've clearly hung on to Ben Rama far too long. Also Saka. Okay. It's like whenever Saka does or comes close to doing anything good, it also is paired with some sort of crippling injury. So he's, yeah, you know, he's not been the funnest player to own, as fun of a player as he is IRL. So got a nice green arrow up 70K up to 147K. Wow. So really, really chuffed about that.
That's a big, that's like a 33% jump or something like that. That's pretty significant, especially, you know, obviously we're still early in the season, first third of the season, but you know, it does get harder and harder to make those big jumps. Like anything more than, you know, 10-20% is pretty massive.
Yeah. So, you know, trying to keep generate some form from here as the fixture pile up comes at us. I mean, from a fantasy point of view, you can talk about the current and upcoming fixture pile up as stressful and chaotic. But mm-hmm. the beauty of it is, particularly if you're trying to gain some form in your mini leagues or overall, is each week will come up very quickly, allowing you to just generate that momentum or put bad game weeks in the past and keep looking ahead and thinking positively.
So normally we do this at the end of the pod, but just I'm curious, what are you thinking for transfers this week? Where's your head on that front?
Yeah, my transfers are already done. I knew I wanted Jota. I saw he was price rising last night. So the only way for me to afford Jota on a -4 was to move Rafinha out. So if you look at Saka and Benrahma, both players I would have rather gotten rid of, I couldn't afford Jota by shipping either of those guys. So Rafinha, I think Leeds, whatever, like Rafinha is the star man there, but I don't really have much patience to keep up with Leeds. So Rafinha left, as did Sanchez in goal. my hilarious backup goalkeeper, somebody on the Slack, I can't remember, said, oh, you're clearing the lane to bring in Ederson to really beef up your backup goalkeeper position. So it's Sanchez and Rafinha out for Ben Foster, who now has a groin injury, and Jota. Yeah. So that's it.
Bachman did not exactly win back his spot today.
No,
so
yeah. As soon as Foster's fit, he's back in. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that makes sense. And, you know, ultimately, yeah, I mean, we've joked about the Sanchez move and you know, it's just one of those 5-second moments of whatever, you know. But, I mean, in the end, you paid a 4-point penalty for it. Yeah. I mean, it's a season where there's you're going to get more than 2,000 points. It's hardly a, you know, a season ender or anything like that. So I think it was smart to just finally do that move, yeah, especially when it funds a player like Jota. So, yeah, I mean, I'm in a similar spot where I'm really seriously looking at Jota. I mean, for me, you know, I'm really a little on the fence. I mean, I may just roll without Jota because I don't really mind having Gallagher for that Leeds match. I could see that being like a fairly open match between those two teams. Mm-hmm. But that would be the thing that would make the most sense. And I guess the move would be Antonio to player X, some forward under 6.5 million. We're going to talk about forwards in a minute here. Antonio to player X, I guess it could be Timo Boogie. Who's the one? I mean, you look ahead to the upcoming run of fixtures, and there really are no forwards that just really get you excited. I mean, if you're a manager who values fixtures, right, and you don't just like take like the best player available or whatever. I mean, like, yeah, like it'd be fun to bring in someone like Josh King or Emmanuel Denny, but they play Chelsea and Man City in their next two. Like, those are like the two teams I least want them to play, you know, in the next 2 weeks. And so that just sort of immediately takes them off the table. And, you know, looking across the board, it's just a lot of it just feels like a lot of guesswork in terms of who you'd actually, you know, yeah, trust to bring in your team. And maybe I know you're a Chris Wood fanatic, Brandon. So maybe he's the one who.
Oh yeah. You know, I should throw an Instagram up of my Chris Wood fat head that I have in my game room. It was like 9 feet tall.
Do they still even make those? Is that still a thing? I have no idea. I wonder if you can still get a fat head.
If you can, I feel like this would be a great like prize for whoever wins the Always Cheating Super League or the Patreon League. A fat head of your choosing.
So I think it's a tricky week though when it comes to transfers, because I look at my squad right now, and if I line up in a 4-3-3, it doesn't look so bad as is. And in theory, you could think, okay, great, just hold your transfer and wait until this weekend and use two. But that only works if we don't see heavy rotation. And I am quite confident we're going to see heavy rotation. Cancelo, James, Rudiger, all three of those players, possibly Salah, who I'm still going to captain, but who I think is at least at risk of being rotated. But Cancelo, James, and Rudiger in particular, I think all three of those players, maybe Rudiger least, although even he is not immune to it, I think could see some rotation in that Watford match. And it's got me a little bit anxious, and I want to beef up my bench. But the problem is, if I decide that I'm going to beef up my bench, then I'm left with really kind of an unattractive move, which would be to turn Sissoko into somebody, which is just like, what's the point, right? I have 0.2 in the bank, so I go to a 4.7. like, I could bring in Allen, right? That's not very exciting. I could turn Damari Gray into somebody 5.7 million or cheaper. Like, not a lot of options there that I'm really excited about. I mean, maybe I just go to Mbomo and just thumb my nose at everybody who wants to drop this guy, or I turn Livramento into somebody, and I don't want to do that either. And so it almost makes logical sense to just do a -4 and bring in Jota and downgrade Antonio. But I don't know. It's just, you know, just cause I don't know, but so I'm really on the fence about what I'm going to do. And, I took all the price rises on the chin today, and then I'm just hoping by tomorrow night, I'll have some sense. Maybe I'll like get like a fluke injury and it'll just like make things very easy for me. it's like one of those weeks where I'm just like, I don't want to make a decision. I hate to play this way, but of course it's hard not to think this way. Right. It's just like that sort of logic of like, well, it's like you could see how any move you make could rebound and hurt you, yeah. you know? And so you're just like, well, every move could rebound and hurt me, so I just don't want to do anything. Yeah. And obviously that's, you know, that's clearly not the way you want to play. So I don't know. So a $5.7 million or cheaper midfielder, I suppose, would be the simplest move here. But again, that means I'm once again in a position coming into this weekend where I don't have Jota or a clear way to get to him. And his ownership is just going to get higher and higher. And so I yeah. guess the other move I could make would be Kane to Vardy, hilariously. I mean, dropping Kane before he's even played a match. But that in some ways would be the simplest way because it would free up the money instantly. And I think I could just go gray to Jota at that yeah. point. So anyway, you know, lots to consider. I'm sure other people are in that same boat as well. So we're going to look at game week 14 in just a second here, but just before we do, always cheating Super League, I'll read out the top. It's actually, we have a three-way tie for eighth here, Brandon. So I'm going to start with eight move my way up to first. Yeah. Hendrik Mattsson, Kevin Walsh, James Hocken. Those are all tied for eighth. Seventh, we've got Jez King. In sixth, Daniel Mindy. In fourth, Andrei Glushkov, tied for fourth with Avinash Jagtap. In third is Khalid Muzik. In second is Torre Hegna. And in first is Daniel Mason Abraham. Congrats to everybody in the top eight, I guess I should say.
Yeah, and I think Daniel Mason Abraham is still number one in the world. Plenty of time, though, for hold music to catch him, and we're all rooting for you.
Indeed we are.
All right, Josh, and I'll just throw in a quick plug for our Patreon, of course, just by click and play, everybody. You support this podcast, but if you want to say thanks to me and Josh and get more FPL content in return, you know what to do. Go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Lots of different tiers to choose from. You get an extra weekly podcast ad-free. Also access to our Slack chat, which we had a robust chat going this Saturday. Josh, you logged off of the Hail Cheaters Twitter account, and we spent some quality time with our patrons. Lots of fun just to banter during the live matches. Also, we got our Week in Review newsletter, courtesy of Mini League Mate, and our Dean's List Manager of the Month Award. We're coming up to the end of November here. So we'll check in on our Patreons to see who is the biggest points getter for November, and the winner of the November Dean's List will get a free Always Cheating t-shirt. T-shirts are available at some of the higher tiers as well. So do check that out at patreon.com/alwayscheating. And shouting out our newest patrons, we had a good influx this week. So thank you to Chalmers Brown, Stephen Curtis, Emily Thornley, Sam Toscano, and The Saint. Josh, that'll do it. Let's take it to a break, come back, and preview game week 14 that starts probably like any minute now.
That's right. Yeah, I think it starts at less than 48 hours from now. By the way, a quick shout out, The Saint is our newest producer patron, Brandon. So I always get to have Saints supporting you, right, in your corner going into these tricky festive fixtures. It is the holiday season after all, Brandon.
Oh, yeah. So, we have to start an HBO show called The Many Saints of Always Cheating to see how it all began.
That's good. That's good SponCon right there. We need to talk to the David Chase company. All right, let's take a break. We'll get back and we'll talk about game week 14.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, Brian, we're back. Game week 14 kicks off on Tuesday. We have a couple matches on Tuesday, a couple matches on Thursday, and then a block of matches on Wednesday. So, you know, this is like, it's fun, but also I think I have meetings like all of Wednesday. You know, it's like, it's the US problem where I'm always like, oh, you know what? It's fine. I've got meetings, but I'm just going to record the matches and I'll watch them afterwards as if I have that kind of self-control. Right. It just means I'll just be flipping my phone over every 5 minutes to see what's happening. So anyway, so the kickoff on Tuesday, and the way I just pulled a few questions. Again, it's a short turnaround time, and so it's not going to be as long as our normal pod. And so I just grabbed a few questions that I thought were relevant and reflecting what a lot of people were thinking about in different ways. And so I know one thing that people are looking at is our cheap forward options. You know, just trying to – I mean, you have Antonio, who's been really disappointing. You have I don't know, but like, you know, I mean, even Tony, who maybe has kind of gotten a stay of execution now, he's a little bit like Jamie Vardy, actually, where he came out the other side, and now he has like a nice run ahead of him. And you're like, well, like two goals in two. I mean, you know, it's like if I was looking to drop one of my forwards this week, it would not be Tony at Spurs. It would be Antonio home to Brighton. I think Antonio out would be more appealing there, you know. So
yeah, you brought up politics earlier with your catchphrases, your idioms, Josh. But I think it's with these strikers too. It's like the way people vote in local elections. You're like, I'm just going to vote for the guy that's currently in office because they all seem terrible. I'm just going to take the path of least resistance. It's like Tony and Vardy, like, I'm just going to vote, you know, party line down the ticket and just get out of here. Nothing's going to change no matter how I vote. Not to be totally cynical here, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, it's like, exactly. Like, it's like you want to be positive, but you also don't want to just make a move to just a waste of transfer. I mean, it's kind of what I was talking about earlier with my move, right? It's like, I kind of want to take Damari Gray out because he plays home to Liverpool. If he has to come in for me, I'm not optimistic about what I'm going to get there, but I don't want to just waste a transfer either, you know, and somebody who has a marginally better chance of doing well this weekend. So, it can get very tricky. And so, Gavin Doyle asked, is Saint-Maximin worth a punt for the next two home fixtures? And, you know, kind of my knee jerk instantly is like, well, now, you know, Saint-Maximin, just Newcastle, like who knows what's going on. But Norwich and Burnley are probably the best two match run you're going to get out of any forward going in the next 2 weeks. And again, we're talking about a very short term, like, you know, one thing you really want to be mindful of around this time is, you know, who's going to get rotated. Newcastle cannot afford to get cannot afford heavy rotation for any of their matches, right? They need to get a win. They have six draws in the season and no wins. So, you know, they really need to put one win across the line. And home to Norwich and home to Burnley are probably two of the best chances they're going to get. So, I do think that he's a reasonable shout, and he is a little bit cheaper, obviously, than Callum Wilson. I mean, you know, what do you think about St. Max?
I like him. I mean, I don't think that he has gotten the returns that probably his play has warranted. He has been, in that Arsenal match, he was just as active on the ball as Callum Wilson. Wilson's problem in the Arsenal match was he just really couldn't get the ball at his feet. But St. Max was doing his typical thing of cutting in along the edge of the 18-yard box, and he just couldn't fashion a chance. But you mentioned these two fixtures coming up, there will be opportunities for both Wilson and St. Max. I do like him as a shout, particularly if he frees up some cash for you to improve your team elsewhere. I think if I had limitless funds and I was targeting bringing in a Newcastle player, I'd prefer to have Callum Wilson. I mean, despite what I just said about how he played in the Arsenal match, I think if Newcastle see more of the ball in the upcoming two fixtures, Wilson is going to probably have more and better looks than Saint-Maximin does. So it's like Saint-Maximin, fun pick. If you can afford Callum Wilson, that'd be my preference.
Yeah, and Wilson is, you know, I mean, had a fantastic season last year, 12 goals and 6 assists. This year, only four goals, but he did miss four matches on the season. So you're talking about a player who's returned four times in nine starts, which, you know, if you through that lens, is a little more impressive. He has blanked in the last four, however, which is surprising. I actually thought he was doing a little bit better than that. As soon as you look at the actual returns in these matches, yeah. And you're like, these bandwagons sometimes get started just based on fixtures and new managers and things like that. And, you know, I actually do wonder if Pukki is really the pick in this sub 7 million bracket. I mean, I think it does seem like Norwich are playing like quite a bit better under Dean Smith. He's quite a good manager, right? I mean, it's sort of like, maybe it's going to work out well for everybody, right? It's like at Villa, Villa seem improved. I mean, obviously it's short term, but you know, Norwich seem improved as well. Like maybe everyone ends up happy in the end, Brandon.
You see this happen so many times with managers, like great managers. I'm not going to compare Dean Smith to Pochettino, but these managers who go on these incredible runs with clubs, as Poch did, taking Spurs almost to a league title, to a Champions League final, and then he just kind of ran out of gas with that side.
Yep.
Whether the players get sick of the training exercises or the personalities just start to fail to mix. And Dean Smith, you look at how invigorated that Villa squad seemed to be now under Steven Gerrard. The talent was there, so they may have just kind of run their course with Dean Smith. And there you go. So I agree. I think Pukki, you think they're playing better under Dean Smith? They're now three unbeaten in a row. Granted, one of those was Farke's victory, but I think Pukki he feels like, we're talking about those Newcastle strikers. There's just like straight up eye test. There's nothing really to back that up other than, you know what? I feel like Callum Wilson had the right energy. He was making the right movement against Arsenal, but there are no stats to help you with this. When you look at that Norwich side playing better, shifting the ball as they do, and Pukki has some attacking returns under his belt to boot, and at 5.8, I think he's probably the best pick if you're looking for a budget forward for the next two fixtures.
Yeah. And I think the other, the lens to view it in, right, is, I mean, you get it, which is just that, like, if you look at all of the kind of sub 8 million, but until Dominic Calvert-Lewin comes back, until Patrick Bamford comes back, I know that they're both starting to train a little bit, but they're not, they're not back yet. Until even Jimenez has been good, but inconsistent, right? I mean, he's a player that I sort of find appealing, but not hugely appealing, right? He's not a break up your team to bring him in player. So
it's a Wolves issue there. The Wolves team just kind of is week to week, whether they can do it or not. But yeah, I interrupted your point.
Yep. No. And then, now unfortunately, Potence, he would come back and started to pick up some minutes. He has COVID. So that kind of, it's always something with Potence, isn't it? Like, what was it with this guy? Like, why is it always something with him? So, I mean, obviously it's not his fault that he got COVID, but it just feels like there's like always some issue with Potence. Isn't it? Well, who knows exactly? What was he doing? It's bad luck on Potence's part. But, three goals and three assists for him. In the end, it's not that good, right? Yeah. He's played in all 13 matches. I guess he only played 2 minutes in one and was, returning from injury at the start of the season. But still, I mean, we're not talking about, this player is necessarily worth almost 8 million. And so maybe you do just go Pukki and hope for the rejuvenation to continue. And then someone like me, like that would suddenly turn one of my crummy midfielders into Diogo Jota, right? It just sort of solves that problem right away. So, I think that, you look ahead to their fixtures, I think they're okay. I think that it's one of those runs where the fixture ticker maybe makes it seem harder than it is, right? Or the fixture difficulty rating on the site, which sometimes you have to kind of retrain your brain not to see those red marks, and because Newcastle away, that's FDR says that's a two, that is a one. That is a one for Timo Pukki. Away to Spurs, that's a three. I'd say that's more like a two. Mm-hmm. I think that is
1.85 is where I'd put that.
Yeah, that is a pretty good match for them. Home to Man United, that's like a two as well, right? I mean, I don't know. Like, what are you expecting from them in that match, right? Yeah. Especially because when you think about that match, they're not going to play like they did at Chelsea, right? They're not going to hang back, just do everything they can to scrap out a point and hope they get a long ball that falls, you know, the right way. They're going to try to win that match, right? And so when that happens, that opens up opportunities from like Pukki. Like, Man United might win that match, but I see Pukki getting some kind of. I see the possibility of a return for him in that one. And then after Man United, they play Aston Villa at home in game week 17. So it's really not a bad run of fixtures. And the nice thing about a 5.8 million player, too, is they are eminently benchable, right? It's very easy. Sometimes when you spend more than like 7 million on a player, like even someone like Antonio, it's just kind of hard to bench them, right? There's just something about the amount of money you've invested in them, which usually does represent their quality, right? Not always, but usually. And so it's hard to be like, I guess I'll start Antonio anyway, just because I've seen him score goals in my life or whatever. But, you know, if you have Pukki, I feel like I'd be very happy to bench him sometimes. And if I'm still going to be playing four or five at the back a lot of these game weeks, it feels very easy for me to keep that going. So I really make an impassioned case for Pukki here, which I didn't expect myself to be doing, but I just got on a roll. So
it just feels like shrewd FPL management. I think, people who are huge fans of football and the Premier League, you get caught up in these. Well, I don't frankly really respect Norwich City as like a top flight club. I favor Jimenez, who is just the quality player, or I favor Callum Wilson for these reasons. But sometimes being a fantasy manager is not as romantic as all of that. Nor is it as logical as you think it is. I mean, the logic would tell me lots of the feedback coming out of game week 13 was all about the Watford strikers in Emmanuel Denis and Josh King, who are in terrific form. But it's just kind of, I think there's a reason why we haven't mentioned their names at all, because their two fixtures coming up are Chelsea and Manchester City back to back. So it just feels like it's too late for the Watford boys. Let's revisit that conversation once the fixtures turn back for them in game week 16. Game week 16, by the way, pivotal game week for fantasy for those managers holding onto their wild card. So let's stick a pin in that. And then I guess spare a thought for the Southampton strikers, who I guess like they exist off to the side because they don't meet any of these requirements that I've set, like romantic picks, quality picks, eye test picks, stats picks. The Southampton strikers are just like, they seem like fine fellas, but just not really in the mix at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Broja had a couple moments where he looked really good, and nothing came of it. It was kind of a weird. I was a little. I don't know what Heisenhill was thinking going into that match. I felt like it was like they played three forwards, and it was like a credit to you guys for trying to win, I guess. But it's like, I don't know. It was like that match had like 4-0 or 5-0 written all over, but kind of from the lineup reveal, So it was just a weird one.
Right. Yeah. And then the question was, how many goals are Liverpool going to pour it on? The commentary was suggesting that it could have been another 9-0, but Jurgen is such good friends with Hasenhüttl that he decided to take his foot off the gas there.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, he did sub Jota. I mean, Jota really should have had a hat trick in that match too.
He was like the first 30 minutes he should have. It was incredible the way he opened that game.
He was really good. So that brings us to Wednesday. Wednesday is when we got the bulk of the matches. There's six on Wednesday, including Liverpool at Everton, the Merseyside Derby, Brandon, which I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be interesting. And I don't really know what to expect from Everton right now. They're sort of, I thought they actually played okay in that 1-0 loss today. They're just in a weird spot, right? They just have, their injuries are just crushing them. But they do have Decore back, which I think will really help. And then once, they were without Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, though. And Rondon, who had one pretty good chance, just is not the answer, clearly. Just does not do enough good things to kind of win matches for Everton. But, the first question here is Foden a really, for Miggs, he says, is Foden a really easy sell for Jota? I'd love to have a City attacker for the fixture, but holding Foden these last 2 weeks has been less than fruitful.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of hedged on Foden in recent weeks, just you know, in deference to how good a player he is. And he honestly has had pretty good form this season when he's been fit. But I think you just have to be really callous with Man City attackers. And as soon as it's clear that the party is over, you must leave. You cannot be the last one to leave the non-firing Man City attacker party. So Foden to Jota, it seems like one of the easier transfers one could make going into game week 14.
I'm glad you said that, because I feel exactly the same way. I mean, part of what makes it so easy is that if Foden wasn't healthy enough to play, to even make the lineup today, I mean the 18 today, it seems hard to believe that he's going to be there at midweek. And then that certainly puts him at a risk for this weekend as well, right? And so you're talking about possibly holding him for possibly missing two matches, right? If there was like an international break coming up or something like that, I think it'd be easier to hold him. But at the moment, it's too hard.
Yeah, it is. So
that was easy. Let's just move to the next question. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. So let's jump to it. By order of FPL wants to know, how much longer can we put up with Antonio's lack of form in the fact that he's 44% owned? That's pretty high, Josh. Is that a reason enough to keep him, i.e. swords versus shield? So by order of FPL suggesting that Antonio remains sort of a shield pick. You want to have him just to cover that 44% ownership. We're kind of in this weird space with Antonio in that he was in such good form early in the season. So many people brought him in to get him to that 44% ownership. We're now moving into the period of the season where you're like, okay, how much of that 44% are actually active teams that you're competing against in this moment? So, it's certainly less than 44%, but I think Antonio goes for me only if it is to retrieve cash for your defense or midfield. Beyond that, I think just what's so interesting about him in that position at West Ham is they don't really have a like for like replacement for Antonio. So I think as long as he's fit, he will play. Now, he's a notorious injury record, and you do have to be concerned with him playing. I can't imagine he can play all 90 minutes all the way through the January 1st set of fixtures. But I don't know. I'm not that bothered to get rid of him. Where are you on this one?
Yeah, I think you summed it up, really. I mean, he's a player that it's fine to sell him, right? If you want to enable somebody else. I do not think that he's a must-own player at this point. I think that quite the opposite. I think that I'd be happy to drop him, and I may even do it this week. Just six blanks in his last seven matches. He always looks good. Okay. I feel like even today he created a chance for your boy Benrahma that did not come to pass early on in that match. Yeah. And, you know, it was just kind of I mean, the whole team, the whole team's form is suffering a little bit right now. The Liverpool win sort of, I don't know, like, did it take the wind out of their sails a little bit or something like that? It was like, it's just a small dip, really. But they have lost their last two matches, and, they're still holding on in fourth place.
They remind me, they remind me of that Everton team right at the start of last season, you know, and James Rodriguez came out of the gate really hot. Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison were both firing. And it was like, if every piece was in exactly the right place, that Everton team was really quite good. West Ham are a team like that with a little bit more depth, but I do feel like West Ham are that type of team where if everything is just so, they are incredible. But on their day, if something just isn't quite right, if one of the players isn't quite feeling it, then you're not quite sure what you're going to get. And I think that is what we're seeing right now with them.
Yeah. And maybe the problem is less Antonio. I mean, I think that Benrahma's drop in form has been even more crucial, right, for West Ham. And it does feel like Antonio, when he gets a chance, is a chance that he's creating himself, right? Even some of the goals that West Ham scored the last few weeks have been goals that Antonio really did the setup for, you know, and just ultimately didn't get any attacking returns for them. So,
Benrahma's days are numbered, if not over, with, Lanzini continually making a case as a super sub to say, hey, play me. Bowen did not. He started from the bench today, and he's been a terrific player for them this season. There are many players that could slot in for Benrahma, and the only reason Benrahma has kept that starting role is his chemistry with Antonio. And if it's not there at the moment, I don't see any reason why Moyes would want to start him.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I don't really know what. And I think this Brighton match could be tricky too, right? I don't see that as an especially easy match for them either. So we don't know what West Ham's going to look like at midweek. We don't know who's even going to start in their midfield. Mm-hmm. And so it certainly makes Antonio, like, as we just talked about, when you look at the forward options, there's really, I mean, unless you're just willing to take a total punt on Wood, or, you know, I guess Danny Ings, Ollie Watkins. I mean, these are players that are kind of interesting, right? I mean, but they both play Man City in game week 14, which makes them a little less appealing.
Right, but you can't look, like, I guess the real point here is you can't look at an Antonio's lack of form and say, I have to get rid of this guy. It is a, who are you bringing in? And, I don't know if I'm going Antonio to Pookie just based on Antonio's lack of form. If I'm going Antonio to Pookie, if it's to get cash for Jota.
Right, which is exactly. It's not like it's like a. That's exactly right. I would not make that move just on a free, just because I'm frustrated with Antonio. I think I would just I would just keep the faith a little bit longer. But I mean, they play Chelsea in game week 15, so maybe that's not a great fixture for them at all. I mean, just another reason why I really think that when people are making their transfers, you should really be thinking about your bench too, and avoid any kind of luxury transfer. If you have a like lingering bench issue, I would try to solve it with your game week 14 transfer. If you really want to have two free transfers, even at the weekend, I would recommend just using one of your transfers now to fix a current problem. So anyway, with AJ says, and this is more of a comment, I think, than a question, but I thought it was relevant to how some people are thinking right now. And we have to talk about the Werner performance, because AJ says, with Timo Werner back and Ben Chilwell out, I couldn't shake the feeling we're reverting back to the old Chelsea that can't score goals. I've been wanting to bring in either James or Alonso, but now I'm a little hesitant. Would you still buy either or both of them?
You know, if you go see a Gallagher show for people abroad or who might not remember Gallagher, this American comedian from the 80s he'd do this whole bit, this whole stage show on observational humor, and then he'd end the whole thing by bringing a watermelon on stage and smash it with a giant sledgehammer. So if you go see Gallagher, and you're sitting in like the first three or four rows, you're probably going to be wearing some sort of a rain poncho, because you don't want to get your going out clothes all destroyed by flying watermelon juice. And I think if you go to see Chelsea and you're in the first three or four rows, you should be given some protective gear if Timo Werner is on the pitch, because when he shoots the ball, he's like liable to take people's heads off who are like to the left or the right of the goal, because he's not going to be hitting the target. There was one shot that he had against Manchester United today where I was like, did he kill somebody in the stands? Just like,
you mean like the sideways one that he did? It was like a weird angle.
It's like, if he doesn't lift his head up, he honestly has no spatial awareness and doesn't understand where the goal could be at any given moment. It's really dire.
But makes it less fun to watch Chelsea matches. I mean, it's kind of, it's like he sort of, he doesn't seem like a bad guy, and he clearly has skill and all that stuff. But there's just something about the way that he plays. It's like he just makes so many blunders, and it kind of makes watching Chelsea less fun. Yeah. Because you're like waiting for the next Timo blunder. But, with all that said, I don't see any reason why that doesn't really affect how I feel about it. I mean, I cannot emphasize enough what an absolute fluke it was that Man United scored today. Yeah. There was nothing in that match that would have led you to believe that they could possibly score. I mean, they were barely in Chelsea's half in this game. The defense is rock solid. It's fantastic. I will happily start my two Chelsea defenders in every single match. I'd recommend that everybody have two Chelsea defenders, because it doesn't matter who they play. Mm-hmm. They're far and away the team that I would be targeting with my transfers if I didn't have more than one defender. And I think Alonso, we should talk about the Alonso substitute move, because that did move James over to the left. And And Alonso was dropped a few weeks ago. So, I mean, there has to be at least a little bit of worry that maybe Alonso is not Tuchel's favorite, right?
Sure, yeah. And Tuchel has experimented with, I mean, when Reece James moved out to the left, it was because Pulisic came on and was occupying that space on the right. So it was Alonso makes way, not Reece James, for that move. And Tuchel has been experimenting with wingers in that wingback position, whether it's Callum Hudson-Odoi and now Pulisic today. It does worry me, especially in matches where Chelsea is going to come up against less resistance, where they don't have to protect the back line as much. He doesn't have to have a defensive wingback focused as much. He can play those attacking wingbacks in those positions, and I think that might, not that Alonso is, you know, the most incredible defensive wingback of all time, but I don't know. I mean, like, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, because as you're saying, Josh, yeah, you should have two Chelsea defenders and start them. And if you're doing that, I think you can manage your risk with somebody like Alonso. Like the matches in which Alonso gets the start, he has the opportunity to get a double-digit FPL point return. And, yeah, you know, when
on corners, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. So James was taking them from the right and Alonso from the left. I think that was how it was working. So Alonso's getting 50% of these, which helps just like baseline bonus as well, putting all those crosses into the box. You see that happen with Luke Shaw all the time. So I still like the Alonso pick. This was a discussion that was happening with our Patreon supporters of like, well, how are we ranking these? You know, I think you can't really argue there are the three standout Chelsea defensive picks right now: Reece James, Rudiger, and Alonso. And the argument is, where does Alonso fit among those three? And I think Alonso is definitely the lowest priority, and perhaps I don't know why. I can't see you disagreeing with that. I think it's Reece James, Rudiger, and then Alonso is the lowest priority.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think exactly in that order. I mean, I was just thinking if there's any other Chelsea defenders that I would consider. I mean, Thiago Silva has played like pretty consistently.
And played well.
Yeah, I started the last five in the Premier League. I mean, I think that it's fair to say that he is the first choice central center back. But, you know, just in the end, we're not talking about players that, like, he's not that much cheaper than the other ones, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like, it's fine, but we're not even talking about like a Virgil van Dijk versus Trent situation where you could maybe make an argument just because he's like up to like 1.5 million cheaper at this point, or it's not that much, you know, 1.3 or whatever. So, but you know, if you're talking about like 0.5 million, it's like, just get Rudiger, you know, like we were saying before, he's like a marauding center back now. Like the guy is just dying to pick up more goals. And that was why he missed that shot. And he wanted it too much.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't handle it. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that's where we are on Chelsea. And then one final question for the Wednesday matches. James Holland says, can we now move away from the Salah auto captain?
I don't know why. It's sort of like we are so spoiled with Salah attacking returns that a week in which he merely gets an assist, suddenly people are like over it. It's incredible, his output this season. I saw this comparison between Salah and Emmanuel Denis. Denis not getting enough shine as this under-the-radar consistent forward for Watford. Emmanuel Denis has 11 attacking returns across goals and assists this season, which is the closest in attacking number of attacking returns to Salah in the entire game. Salah, who has... Yeah. Any guesses, Josh?
No.
20.
20. Wow. Jeez.
So, you know, it's just like the
jeez. what insight from me. Holy moly.
It's just like the gulf is honestly staggering. So that is what the blanket captaincy on Salah is all about. You know, it doesn't.
Did you
leave.
See what Salah's?
Go ahead.
You got me to pull up his profile page here. I did not realize he was owned by 72.5% of managers. That is insane. Yeah. Have we ever been had a player above 60? 72.5 is, and Brennan, this is another thing that's exciting too. He's number three for creativity in the ICT index.
Holy crap. Who could possibly be number one?
I don't know, but we're going to spend several hours digging into that and see what we can find out.
Yeah, I guess it's not like interesting podcast punditry to say, nah, I'm still good with captaining Salah. You can walk away from game week 13 and say, you know, Trent is becoming very consistent to that point. But then I think if you go that Trent route, then you also have to include the likes of Reece James and Cancelo and these other high-flying attacking defenders. And this week you saw how easy it is to turn a defensive asset from, you know, an amazing nine-pointer to a one-pointer in the blink of an eye. My condolences to all the Ruben Diaz owners out there.
I think that Trent is the one that I think is you know, would be at least competing a little bit with Salah, because Liverpool are obviously much stronger defensively with Van Dijk back, and it is 1.3 million difference between those two, by the way. Much stronger defensively and offering a lot of attacking with turn, a little bit of goal threat. He has outscored Salah in the last three matches, and there are some matches up ahead where it's very difficult to imagine anyone scoring on Liverpool. Yeah. And so I think that there's at least an argument for Trent, probably more than any other player on this list that I would receptive to. You know, I think that I think you could really make an argument for him just because he is essentially playing like a midfielder a lot of these games, especially when they're playing teams that they can kind of run over a little bit. And so, you know, the problem is when you talk about those matches, though, you're talking about matches where Salah should, in theory, do quite well as well. And so it's sort of, I mean, he has not been rested a single minute so far in the Premier League. He's played the full 90 every single match. Yeah. At some point, he's going to get that rest. And it just feels like it's like impossible to discern when that's going to happen, though. I mean, they play Wednesday and Saturday. He played the first match out of the international break. He played in the meaningless Champions League match. He played yesterday. He'll probably play on Wednesday. Does it happen on Saturday? Right. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, that to me is the one where I would really consider it, because I do have Harry Kane on my team. They just got a free rest. And Spurs play Norwich at home in game week 15. If I had any indication that Salah was going to be rested for that game week 15 match, I think that Kane would be a really appealing captain for that Norwich match.
Not completely related, but, and I don't have a source for this, but there was some word this week of, I don't remember if it was Klopp or some Liverpool journalist talking about Salah going away for AFCON, the African Cup of Nations, and Nico Williams coming in, filling in for Trent at right back, allowing Trent to finally fulfill this long-standing promise moving farther up the pitch into an actual attacking midfield position.
Playing as Mo Salah, that would be, it'd be amazing, because he would suddenly shift. Like, you would just move your auto captain from Mo to Trent, right? Yeah. Like, it would just be like game over. Like, that would be, oh wow, that'd be wild. I hope that happens. He'd have to score a little more. I mean, I think that he'd have to change his instincts a little bit, because I think that there are so many matches where I feel like Trent gets into the box and he's about 3.5 feet from goal, and he could just you know, strike it, and he just looks for, you know, Sadio Mane to cross to, right, or something like that.
He's doing the Arsene Wenger, let's just walk it into the net sort of
pass, you know. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think for game week 14, I'm going to stick it with Mo. I think that the Merseyside Derby, it's a pretty, you know, it's just enough of a competitor. I don't actually, you know, it's funny, because I remember a Merseyside Derby a couple of years ago that was a midweek match where Klopp rested. Mm-hmm. This is the problem is you cannot smart the manager. If there's a reliable leak, the problem is the leak won't come before the deadline because they play Wednesday. As much as a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and Liverpool play on Wednesday. So there's really no way to do it. You just have to captain Salah. And, you know, if he comes on, he could still score too. I mean, it's not like it's a guaranteed one-pointer. I mean, if Salah comes on with 30 minutes to go against Everton, I fancy his chances to get something out of that match, right? So
fancy. You fancy it, Joshua.
I would fancy. I know. You know, the longer we do this podcast, Brendan, the more of these Britishisms just like actually crept into my language. I even say it like in real life now, this kind of stuff, you know, like it's crazy. So, I mean, punt, I've just adopted. I just say punt all the time now. Anyway. All right. Thursday. One last question here, Brandon. It's from Jeff Petter, longtime supporter of the podcast, Brandon. He says, if I take Mbeumo out, who am I supposed to replace him with?
This is it, right? You know, who?
I just went through this.
Everybody wants to get rid of a lot of these players. There's some aggravating players right now. Lots of players to get rid of. Not a ton of players calling out to bring in. But, you know, you pulled up this list of expected points returns for game week 14 through 19. Who's top of that list? But it's Jared Bowen from West Ham. I think seeing Bowen rested in this formation that Moyes rolled out against City was interesting. And I guess it takes a little bit of the sting out of it. You have to scroll all the way past James Ward-Prowse and Suchek, though, to get to Burnley's Cornet. Now, I'm kind of disappointed that we didn't get to see the Burnley Spurs match, you know, mostly because a lot of my friends didn't get Spurs points. But also, I think Burnley and Cornet have become this, like, it's a building hype train. And I wanted to see how Burnley looked against a team like Spurs. So I still I'm still kind of reserving my judgment and my endorsement of Cornet at Burnley. It is just such a motley crew, though, looking at midfielders in this price range. And ultimately, I think you just come back to these the standard flag bearers of mid-priced attacking mids right now, which are Gallagher and Emile Smith Rowe. Now, I think Saka had one of his rare outings against Newcastle where he outshined Smith Rowe. Smith Rowe was not without his opportunities. He had at least two good looks at goal. So I think Smith Rowe remains probably the preferred Arsenal budget midfielder there. I don't know that I would make a case for anybody outside of those two.
No, I just went through this myself, a couple of days ago. I decided on Gallagher and I kind of immediately regret it. I mean, he was playing so deep that it's kind of hard to imagine him ever getting anywhere close to goal and actually scoring a goal. I mean, Leeds would maybe be the match, you know, where he could do it. I think that I'm not enthused about any of these. And also, if you're talking about Mbeumo out and you're trying to place him like for like, then you're talking about somebody who's like 5.6 million or cheaper. And that's an even smaller pool, right? I mean, you're looking at, just like real, like up and down, you know, Damari Gray, Harvey Barnes, if he actually keeps that spot, I mean, like Harvey Barnes has been like kind of like, he's like one of those, like, he's honestly an Mbeumo type. Just like, well, like he should be doing more than he does, you know, and it always seems like when nobody has him, he does really well. And then when we all bring him in, he gets dropped or whatever. So, Harrison was a player I was briefly considering, which it now feels like a complete joke after, he's just not on it so far this year. I mean, his price is great, right? It's like I want it to work out, but it just is not working. So, yeah, I mean, it just depends on how high up you want to go. I mean, that's ultimately why someone like Jota becomes so appealing, because you don't have to go that much higher to get to Diogo Jota, right? A 7 million midfielder who's playing out of position as a forward for Liverpool. Yeah. I mean, just like repeat that sentence back in your head and you know, you decide how long you want to wait before you bring him in.
The other kind of out of position midfielder as forward player is Trossard. And Trossard has kind of been, we've been throwing him around the last couple of weeks, and I thought he looked really terrific against Leeds. He had he was getting all of the opportunities. Mape got a few and just like blew them in hilarious Mbappe ways. Trossard just looked like the truly talented attacking player on Brighton right now. The issue I have with Trossard is exactly what you're saying about Jota, where at 6.5, it just feels like an undue cost-cutting measure to go for Trossard instead of somebody that's either slightly more expensive or slightly less expensive. Like, how do you compare Trossard at 6.5 to Emile Smith Rowe at 5.9, and what can you do with that extra 0.6? And then if you consider Brighton again and Trossard, the fixtures, Brighton have been having a good season, but I just don't really know how to stack them against upcoming fixtures. You've got West Ham, Southampton, Spurs, Wolves. It doesn't seem like it's a fairly decent run of fixtures, but for who and what kind of form could we say Brighton are in at the moment? So it just feels a little odd and ill-timed for a Trossard move.
Yeah, I'm not feeling the Trossard move either. I mean, I don't know if you saw Mbappe, by the way. He I think he had like 1.1 XG from that match. Like wow. Mbappe alone had that. I know he had like one giant chance, but I think it just in general he totally failed to impress. So yeah, that Brighton defense. Here's the thing, Brandon, and I feel like this has been said a lot the last couple of weeks. I feel like independently I've heard this in a couple different podcasts, but I think it's true. I just feel like I don't need to watch a Brighton match for a while. I respect Brighton supporters. Our friend Joe was a Brighton supporter. There's a lot of great Brighton fans out there. Credit to Graham Potter. What can you explain to me, Brandon? We'll take this question off the air. But why are Brighton not fun to watch? Why am I not having fun watching Brighton play? Answer that for me. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think it's the same issue that Manchester United have. It's the lack of a robust central defense. There is no real connective tissue this seems to be like the most difficult thing to do in top flight football right now. Is there's a bunch of talented attacking players out there. You know, there's a moderate amount of talented defensive players. Not a lot of guys who want to play in the pivot. Guys like Rodri, like this is why Man City are as consistent as they are, is Pep just goes out there and picks like the best pivot players, deep-lying defenders who can tackle and pick passes. And, you know, Solly March came on for – Solly March isn't exactly this type of player for Brighton, plays a little wider, but like Basuma like potentially could have been that guy. Because he had a really great start to the season when Brighton was top four and looked like maybe they're going to kick it up a gear. Basuma had some issues and he's back in the squad, but he didn't look like the same Basuma this weekend. So that would be what I would identify as the Brighton issue.
Yeah, and this is, again, Brandon, why we can never do a 30-minute pod, because it ends with me just asking you to explain to me why I don't like watching Brighton, and nothing to do with fantasy.
Yeah, but I can tell you, Josh, what you do love about Brighton is going to the Amex and eating those delicious hamburgers.
I love it. Not an ounce of moisture. It was incredible. Never forget that. I will say, I want to actually go like hang out in Brighton. I want to go like walk the beaches and stuff. I don't want to end this on such a sour anti-Brighton note, because we had a good time. I have a Brighton flag in my apartment right now, Brandon, that I got from that stadium. So
we love it.
All credit to Brighton. Great supporters. Let's take this off. Just to answer Jeff's question finally, though, I would just hold in BOMO. I don't see anybody in that. If you go up, you know, a couple million, there's obviously some options. We didn't really talk about those, the Man City midfield that much in that 7 million range. I'm not convinced. And I also think that we don't know when Foden and Grealish are going to come back. And so I think it just makes the whole thing kind of like a stay away for me. I'm still not on the Bernardo Silva thing. Anyway, so I would just keep him bum up. And there's no one in that kind of immediate price range that I like more. Take a break. We'll get back and we'll wrap up this pod. All right, Brandon, back. As a reminder, Game Week 14 kicks off on Tuesday. The deadline is 1 p.m. I assume we're both captaining Sala. I mean, it feels like we kind of ended up there in the end, right?
Yeah, I've got the armband on Sala, unsexy, but feels fine. And then Jamie Vardy, he gets to have some fun and be my vice captain for a while.
Yeah, that actually does sound kind of fun. And I guess for me, it'll be Harry Kane. We didn't talk about Spurs because what can you say? I mean, we didn't get a chance to see him play. They're a total like. I mean, it just stinks because now we've lost one of the good fixtures that makes you want to transfer them in. And now I feel like I would. It's funny because if you didn't have a Spurs player, would I recommend bringing one in front of the Brentford match? I mean, I guess I would. I don't know. I mean, like, how can you recommend a Spurs player right now? I mean, they have not been delivered at all. It's all fixture based, but I mean, we've seen the reverse, right? We just see what Antonio looked like when he had a bunch of a run of poor fixtures, right? He blanked the whole time. And so like this is how it works. It's not like the most fun and exciting way to play, but you have to sort of bring in good players ahead of a good run of fixtures. That's just sort of the really meat and potatoes style of fantasy. And so I think that, I still think that they're like, you know, I mean, Brentford, Norwich, Brighton, Leicester, the next four, all really good.
Yeah. Well, I just on the Spurs point, I don't think the FPL enthusiasm behind Kane and Son and Spurs over the last few weeks was just because we need to attack these quickly upcoming fixtures. The idea was Conte is a world-class manager. There is great FPL returns and great football in those players, in Kane and Son, especially if they can just get going. So these FPL transfers for these guys were intended to be long-term moves, and I don't think you can lose sight of that. So, you know, and that said, yeah, so what if you don't know how to really call this Spurs-Brentford match? I would still encourage anyone who's targeting Spurs to jump on them this week, because you're not just targeting the Brentford match. You're targeting these Spurs assets to have them for a longer run. So it's not, you know, you're looking for this move to pay off over the course of a month, not just 1 week. So yeah, I'm kind of like, I feel like I have gotten away with it, kind of biding my time on Spurs. It's just like an insane.
I wasn't
going
to say
luck.
Anything. Yeah.
Oh well. Now,
I was just kidding. Yeah. No. You've had some. Yeah. This is how it all works. I mean, of course, in 38 weeks, this is why like it's never good to talk about luck one way or the other, right? Because over the course of 38 weeks, we all get very lucky and very unlucky. Yeah. And it's like, especially when bad luck happens to me, it's like, it's very hard not to feel like you're the only person that the bad luck has happened to. Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. It was like today, like this morning, I was talking to my wife and I was just so annoyed about the match getting canceled, but I knew there was nowhere to put my annoyance, right? There was what was I going to get mad at Burnley for not, you know, heating their ground early enough in the day or whatever. I mean, the one thing I will say, the one complaint I might make, Brandon, was, you know, it was snowing very hard in Manchester, and then, snow stopped, and then it was kind of fine. Like, can you just delay the match for an hour? Is it like, would it have been that hard to just like wait an hour and maybe see? Like, I know you had a lot of fans in the stands there, but was it really... Was it going to get worse?
I don't know. And I don't know if it's a broadcast rights issue. If the broadcaster can't air it an hour later. I mean, the biggest moment to come out of the postponement was less to do with the game and the players. It was that Twitter post from a Texan American Spurs fan traveling with his wife, where they had traveled nonstop for 31 hours from the Dallas, Texas airport into London, trained it up to Burnley to see their beloved Spurs. And there's this hilarious selfie of the two of them on this train. They're like, we're doing it. We're going to go see Sir Harold. And, it's like great pictures that precede unfortunate events. Wow. And I just can't believe it. Harry Kane reached out to them and said, you can come see a home match as my personal guest at White Hart Lane. Now, I don't know if Harry Kane's going to cover their like $1,000 airfare or not. That's another question. But
wow. Just like, stick around. The match is like 3 days away. You know, if you made 31 hours, you're going to go right back.
True. It's true. It's true. Yeah. Definitely. maybe get to check out that cheese cave while you're there. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the rough with the smooth, and you know, a bad game week comes for us all, and you're lucky if it's just one over the course of a season.
Yeah, that's right. That is honestly, it's just a, it's just crazy. I was actually thinking earlier today that it feels like this season has been going on for such a long time. And I think the international breaks are a factor here. You know, there's so many at the start of the season, and but it is remarkable that this is our game week 14 preview pod, right? I mean, we could do, you know, 10 more pods and we'd still have more weeks to go than we've had so far this season.
Yeah.
You know, and so there really is a long, 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 long way to go. And so it's good to keep your perspective a little bit. So on that note, kicks off on Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Shorter pod than usual. We'll be back on next week, Sunday. And if you want to support the podcast, that would be terrific. We had a good time. And I wanted to participate more. And then I just had like family stuff thank you for picking up the slack a little bit, Brandon. But I was there.
You were there. You're there in spirit.
Grumpiness. Yeah, exactly. That's where I like to let out my anger. I was on the Twitter Slack.
When you're not there, the kids ask about you. They wonder what you're up to.
And, yeah, dad's away. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wondering if I think somebody, I think it was our friend Eric with the K, said he checked in on Twitter today, Sunday, after the Spurs postponement. And he said he checked in on the Hail Cheaters Twitter, and there was nothing but charred remains.
That's pretty much true. I was trying to shake it off unsuccessfully, but thank you to everyone who supports the pod. And if you want to become part of that community, if I may be so bold as to use that word, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Quick thank yous to our producers, Mike DiPietro, Trevor Ingerson. Great to see you, Trevor. I saw Trevor three times in a week, Brandon.
Incredible.
My gosh. It was almost like a pre-pandemic moment for me right there. I see him three times in a week.
And he gets better each time you see him, isn't it true?
That's true. It's like a wine, just ages so well. Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, the Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Dave Wignall-Lodal, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forbrooks, Go Gang, Paul Hertzick, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Carrie Swanson, Karen Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mickey Ewing. I think you read these faster than I do, Brandon. Sam Shower, Rich Evans, Future Media Group FPL, Ben Swinney, George Kinney, Shiv Majoria, Ron Frosk, AJ, Jeremy Spiker. We had a lot of Patreon producer questions on this week's pod, Brandon. Lazaros, you know us, Jesse Halstead, Matthew Becker, Caleb Robbie, Todd Byerly, Albert Paxoy, Martin Opseth, Lee Hickman, Volgir, Paulson Kruger, Jazz Binney. Looking forward to seeing you in a couple days, Jazz. Francis Moore, managed by Lasso, James Keeley, Keegan Walsh, and The Saint, our newest Beautiful. Producer, The Saint.
I wanted to give a shout out to Carrie Swanson as well, our veterinarian producer. I listened to your wonderful Patreon solo pod on Thursday or Friday morning, Josh, and you mentioned that Carrie was a dentist. Now, I'm sure Carrie has cleaned many, sets of teeth on horses or domesticated house cats or dogs or whatever. But Carrie, we see you.
Say veterinarian. Well, jeepers creepers. Thank you for correcting that. I guess I should send her a note or something. Sorry, Carrie.
No, Carrie loves it. Yeah. She loves the banter. And if you love the banter too, if you love Always Cheating, please give us a rating, a review, or subscribe anywhere where you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. Follow us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters or anywhere you get social media. Email us hailcheaters@gmail.com. And for all this info and more, you can visit our website, alwayscheating.com. Josh, I'm going to give you a big howdy, Mbakani forever. Just in honor of all this Norwich City talk in this week's episode, I want to go back in my mind palace and remember all those great Mbakani goals for Norwich.
Oh, some wonderful goals and wonderful moments where he couldn't get out of
a wet paper bag.
Yeah. There's like a great image of him like getting stuck on a Ferris wheel or something like that. Roller coaster or something. I'll do one last shout out here, though, which is for the Get Back documentary, the Beatles documentary, which is terrific. And it sounds like one of those things, like I thought I was completely Beatles'd out. Like I didn't need any more Beatles. Like most people, I had several years where I was obsessed with the Beatles, and I got it like totally, but where I just couldn't stand to even listen to them anymore. Cause I was so Beatles up, but I'm loving this documentary. It's created by Peter Jackson. It's really, really good. So if you have not started to watch it, I highly recommend it. That's my final shout out.
I can't wait to check that out. I'm waiting for my 1 month of Disney Plus that I buy every year for when it's like the Chronicles of Boba Fett or whatever that.
Yeah. Season 2 of that lost me. Too much like setting up for spinoffs. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah. It's the moment when you realize that, Star Wars is for kids. It's a remarkable moment in all of our lives.
But, it's a depressing moment.
I cannot wait to watch that Beatles doc. I'm glad to hear it's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I think so. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you soon. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.